Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, host of the Her Podcast. Welcome to our show. It's episode 483, closing in on 500, as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her vagina business. What? What is this? Oh my goodness gracious. See, I knew I got you at that. So it's going to be a great show, and I know it's really going to hit you deeply. Before we begin, please know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. These are vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature, and they've got a special gift for women, the new award-winning Her Life Stages products. And these products support you all the way from your menstrual years through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. This is an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages products, run on over to your local health food store. Check it out at solaray.com. And when you do, use HER as a promo. So it's H-E-R. And then at the same time, you can run on over to Whole Foods. You can go to Sprouts. It's everywhere, even on Amazon. So remember, we're talking about Her Life Stages as the new products. And here's your first reminder to click onto iTunes to rate and review today's show. Because you know what we do? We wait around to hear your feedback. Want to know what you think about this pretty amazing episode that's coming on up. I'll give you another reminder later on. Okay, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So one of the things I'm pretty much involved in, I wear many hats, is really looking at the whole issue of what we now call femme or feminine technology, femtech. And I've been very happy to, as a corporate, wearing my corporate hat, oversee some startups that have worked within the field of women's health that have digital therapeutics, you know, to help manage hot flashes, for instance. And that's the number one in the world is Ember Labs, their Wave device using thermoregulation. There's also other really cool devices coming out, some FDA approved as medical devices, like Bone Health Technology just came out with a vibration belt that basically stimulates bones to grow and to be able to help maintain bones of women who are losing bone mineral density, usually after the age of 40. So all kinds of cool things. And then I stumble across this phenomenal book called, yeah, you got it, The Vagina Business, The Innovative Breakthroughs That Could Change Everything in Women's Health, and just came out. And the author is Dr. Marina Gerner. And Marina is an award-winning journalist who's written books about art, finance.
Just articles, not books. This is my first book.
Okay, so it's articles, all right? And your articles have appeared in The Economist, Financial Times, Wired, The Wall Street Journal, and more. And you've actually been hailed as a Renaissance woman of the modern age as you bring a unique interdisciplinary perspective. And Marina is also an adjunct professor at the New York University Stern School of Business and holds a PhD from the London School of Economics. And oh my gosh, what can I say? I mean, this is so cool because it's right up my alley and I couldn't wait to talk to you. And I have your wonderful book here. So welcome, Marina, to our wonderful Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the fabulous introduction. I'm very flattered.
Oh, you know, when you're reading these things, it's like, what? All right. Now, Marina, what I always ask authors is, why did you write this? What prompted you to write it?
It all began about 5 years ago when I gained a new insight, which is that if I ask you to imagine a person who's having a heart attack, who do you see? You know, most of us, you can answer that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a physician, so I'm in on the...
You're in on it. Yes.
You always think about a guy, you know, clutching his chest and whatever. And it brings back a memory when I was in my internship, as I was in the hospital emergency room, and the telemetry went off and said, paramedics coming in with an MI. That's a myocardial infarction or a heart attack. And so there we were already, you know, in the exam bay and everything. And in came a man and a woman, right? And they immediately grab the guy and start ripping his clothes off. And he's going, no, no, it's not me. It's my wife. Meanwhile, they look over in the corner and the wife is like slumping down, you know, the wall. You're like, what? Got that one wrong. So you're right. You're absolutely right. You think of a guy.
That's a brilliant example. I think that's a great story. So most of us, yeah, we think of a guy. That's what we tend to see in movies. He's clutching his chest. He feels a lot of pressure on his chest. The pain is radiating down his left-hand side. But those are typically male symptoms. They're not the symptoms women tend to experience. And so we know a lot less about how to spot heart health issues in women. And as a result, women are 50% more likely than men to be given the wrong diagnosis after a heart attack. Women also wait longer to seek medical help. And that's because most medical research has focused on the male body. And so our knowledge has been formed by that. And so I'm a journalist. I write about technology and business and a whole variety of things, as you have said. And I was super excited to come across a company that was spun out of MIT that has created the coolest thing. They created a smart bra. So it uses ECG technology and it helps women who are at risk monitor their heart health. And it's also used in clinical trials so that women can be enrolled remotely to, you know, fill the gender data gap that we currently have in heart health. And I was amazed to come across this company because not only did I realize there's a huge problem, but there's also a solution. And I love hearing and exploring and writing about solutions.
I saw the company a while back, and I believe at one of the FemTech, maybe it was Health, the big HLTH meeting a couple years ago or so, I believe I met one of the founders, and it was just ridiculously cool. And the bras are kind of neat looking too. They don't look like, you know, you're wearing some kind of AI, you know, equipment or something, but you know what I mean? They look cool.
Exactly. They told me they wanted to create a garment that a woman would actually want to wear. And you've probably met Alicia Chong Rodriguez, the founder, who usually speaks on the stage. Yeah. So she's the founder of Bloomer Tech. And I was at a conference, which is also where I met her. And I was in one of these balcony seats further up. I heard her speak and I was so keen to get her business card. I ran down the stairs in the lunch break and I said, please, can I write about you? Give me your business card. And then I reached out to all of these editors I usually write for who are usually really keen to commission my stories, but somehow there was silence from them. And I think they thought it was a bit niche and they didn't quite understand, you know, a smart bra for what?
These wouldn't happen to be all men that you were talking
about. You've guessed it. Many of them are. Absolutely. And this was also pre-COVID. So I think something shifted during COVID. I mean, many things did shift during COVID. But initially, at the start of the pandemic, I don't know if you remember this, but men had worse symptoms. Men were more affected. Nowadays, women are more likely to have long COVID. But at the time, men were more affected, and we didn't quite know why. And if you were to be cynical, you could say suddenly people started paying attention to sex differences in health because men were more affected. And at that point, I managed to publish the story about the smart bra in The Guardian, and the story did really well. And I was invited to chair a panel at a FemTech conference, which was one of the first big female technology conferences organized by Women of Wearables. And the panel I was chairing was early in the morning. It was on data privacy, and it was done. And I remember staying for all the other panels. I was so fascinated by the topic. I was immediately drawn into it because as a woman, you think you know about your body, but there's so much more to know in reality. I expected to learn more about technology, but I was just sitting there learning about my body as well as learning about technology. So I was drawn into the topic by the smart bra. And then I had a more personal motivation as well. So I was in my early 30s at the time, and I knew that I wanted to have children soon. And I also knew, and this is the kind of thing women talk about in hushed voices sometimes, I knew that 9 in 10 first-time mothers end up with a birth injury. And it's the kind of thing where some women talk about it, whereas others say, oh, don't tell her, you don't want to put her off, don't tell her. But it is something I knew about, something I was keen to avoid. And I was very excited to come across a company called Materna Medical in California that has created a device that is a dilator that could potentially help us prevent birth injuries. So it stretches the muscles of the vaginal canal at the start of labor to make the muscles stretchy as you would before working out, for example. And then right now they're in clinical trials, so they're not on the market yet. But the idea is to make it easier for the baby to then go through the vaginal canal and protect the muscles.
Without all of the tears.
Exactly.
That take place.
Exactly. Without the tearing and without the need for an episiotomy as well, you know, which are these brutal procedures that are routinely done sometimes. And research has shown that tearing is actually better than having an episiotomy. So this device is very simple in many ways. It's a dilator, and dilators are used in other situations. But in this case, it could really help with vaginal tearing, and it could also help to prevent pelvic organ prolapse later on. So I was really excited to learn about this device. And when I researched this space, I realized that the last big innovation in the standard of care in the birth space was the epidural, which was popularized in the 1950s. And it just shocked me because there's no other field of technology where we take something that was created and popularized such a long time ago and we say, look, this is great. This is the best thing we have for you. And yeah, the epidural is great, but why isn't there so much more? Why haven't we seen, you know, hundreds of new creations in the birth space? Why are women still giving birth with devices that can be described as salad forks and toilet plungers, you know, forceps and vacuum delivery?
Yeah, and I think that that's huge. There has been so little innovation all the way through. I mean, if you look at just menstrual cycles, the tampon was invented a million years ago.
Yes, in 1931, I believe, is when the modern tampon was created.
So, but there's been no innovation. Beyond that, the only thing that's really been happening are changes with menstrual cycles. So eliminating menstrual cycle to playing around with dosages on birth control pills and other devices. But honestly, just zip for innovation in a big way outside of pharmacology. So I think what you're saying is incredibly spot on. So you're talking about within the sphere of birth and that whole pregnancy type experience. And you're right. Those tools and the equipment are ridiculously antiquated. There's got to be a better way.
Absolutely. There are many things that can be done remotely, for example, with the help of technology like the non-stress test, you know, during a pregnancy, for example.
So all of this, I'm sure, inspired you to say, wait a minute, right?
Yes, it did. And there was a moment of anger I had, which is I spoke to startup founders in the, let's call it the vagina-centric space. And I heard from them again and again that it's very hard to raise money in this space because investors, as one VC investor put it, don't want to talk about vaginas in their Monday morning partner meetings. So you have a bunch of guys, because the vast majority of VC investors are male, and they are too embarrassed to talk about vaginas in front of their colleagues in a business setting And so for that reason, they don't invest in these kinds of companies. You know, there are other reasons, but that's one of the reasons. And it just shook me to the core to learn that that is the reason for why we don't get the innovation that we want and deserve. It's just mind-boggling. And so I wrote this story for Wired magazine called We Need to Talk About Investors' Problem with Vaginas. And the story went viral. And I was getting all these messages from entrepreneurs, but also from some investors saying, I initially had this problem, but then I got over it. And so I realized that I wanted to devote all of my energy to this topic. And I focused the next 3 years on writing the book. And I looked at all areas of femtech. So not just birth and pregnancy, but also menopause and fertility and heart health and bone health and family-focused technology and so on. So my goal is to give people a really big overview of what's possible in that space.
I think your book definitely accomplished your goal. I mean, as you run through the different kinds of innovations that you told stories about, but you started everything with a very interesting question. And the question is, who are we to interfere with Mother Nature? What did you mean by that? It's like, you know, technology, you know, interfering with Mother Nature. And is Mother Nature happy with all of this? So go for it. What did you mean by that question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that comes up in the women's health space or in the pregnancy and birth space in particular, where people are happy to provide medical solutions to all other issues. But when it comes to female bodies, they'll say, oh, who are we to interfere with Mother Nature? You wouldn't say that when somebody needs a hip replacement or a knee replacement or something else. But then when it comes to female bodies, there is this deep-seated attitude that we shouldn't be interfering with Mother Nature, even though I would say that is our task. And I was wondering whether that goes back to the story of Eve and kind of Eve's curse and whether that's so culturally ingrained in people that we kind of resist the idea of intervening. But I think it's our job to turn Eve's curse into a blessing and to find solutions, to seek out solutions, to invent new things so that women don't have to suffer in silence.
So perhaps the word isn't interfere. You know, the way I would look at it is we're here to support Mother Nature, right? So I would like to see it as, it's not that we're interfering. What we want to do, our goal actually, is to find ways to be able to optimize that which Mother Nature has gifted us with, and then we can kind of run with it. What do you think?
I think that's a good way of putting it. I agree.
Okay, cool. And to your point about the investors and the rest of it, I've sat in so many investor meetings where the guys get glassy-eyed and you get, well, there are a couple things. One is there's the issue of women in general, right, with guys. So to them, they oftentimes will come up with some stereotypic vision in their mind of a woman who is fill in the blank, pregnant, perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal, and they can't identify other than having maybe some example from their life, you know, like, oh, she reminds me of my mother or she, you know, that type of thing. And they're very uncomfortable with that. I think a lot of guys, number one. Number two, there's the whole issue of just understanding biology and physiology. Now, we're not asking, you know, venture capitalists and private equity guys and gals to understand every nuance about a woman's biology and physiology. That's not the goal. But it's like just know enough to be dangerous, number one. And then I have also found when you show them the metrics, okay, that 6,000 women are entering menopause every single day in the United States, that 75% of them suffer in silence, that they're not getting anywhere near what they need, that they're paying at minimum $3,000 at minimum, $3,000 per year out of their pocket to find solutions. As we say in the financial world, follow the money. All right. So hello, now do I have your attention? And here's this new innovation that will improve XYZ within the femtech world. I think that it's beginning to slowly but surely seep into that. The other piece is really looking at the emergence of more women partners in venture capital and private equity who are aging in. So you can guarantee yourself they're not 30. More than likely, they're 50-ish, right? Plus or minus, or older. And so most of them will, you know, immediately get it because they're living it. But we don't have enough of them. It's definitely changing, though. If you look at the people, the partners and associates who are now involved in venture capital and the rest of it. So I want to kind of move over to this part two in your book, which is woman-centric design.
Yeah. Can I just comment on what you've said? Because I had some thoughts on that. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I had some thoughts as you were speaking. The first point you made is that investors tend to think of a certain person that they know. And that's certainly something I've been hearing from founders as well, that they talk about their product and then investors will say, oh, let me go home and ask my wife. And then if the wife doesn't have the issue, they dismiss the issue. Even though, well, first of all, maybe your wife isn't telling you. And then second of all, you wouldn't make a business decision usually in any other space based on one person as a case study. You would at least try to get a sense of statistics and data, as you have said. So that's an interesting and a very unique stumbling block, I think, in the femtech industry, is that on the one hand, investors might say, oh, let me go and ask my wife. On the other hand, if they do know someone who's struggling with fertility, for example, their sister or whoever else, then that can also help inspire them into the space. But on the other hand, it's a shame that women need to have that, femtech entrepreneurs need to have that element of relatability. Because in other spaces, you don't necessarily need to be relatable on a personal level. You just have to have a good business case. And as you said, people just follow the money, right? So that's something femtech entrepreneurs tend to lean on. They tend to present their case in a data-based way. And that's one of the success strategies that I've written
about. That's happened so many times with groups I have worked with as well. And that is, they'll immediately say, let me see what, you know, send the device over to my home and let me see what my wife said. Oh, great. An N of one. And meanwhile, you're describing studies with an N of 200 and or 2000. And all they can say is, let me see what my wife thinks. Now, I think one of the main reasons why that occurs is they just lack the information themselves. They're not knowledgeable about this. And so they depend upon their wife or sister or somebody to chime in and give them a little input. And that input could be highly influential. If the answer is, I have absolutely no problem, and then to your point, they may not be saying anything, then you've got a problem one way or the other.
Yeah. And typically, investors tend to have advisors as well. So it wouldn't be that difficult to find a gynecologist or an expert, if you're not the subject expert, to then advise you on the subject. And so I have a whole chapter on investment in the space. And there are lots of new funds that were specifically set up to invest in femtech. But I think it's really important for us to get more generalist investors involved as well. So I interview a female investor who's at a general fund and also a guy who's at a general fund. And I talk to them about how they got into femtech investing, because I think we can't wait for these relatively small funds to get bigger. We need to get everybody on board to really channel money into the space.
I know. And again, we're in the very, very early stages of being able to muster up this kind of money. So it's wonderful to see large companies begin to really understand that there's a need here. So Better Being is the largest vitamin supplement company in the United States, based in Salt Lake City. And they make all kinds of phenomenal supplements. Solaray, of course, is our primary sponsor for the Herb podcast. And one of the things that I found was amazing about them is that they opened up their hearts and their minds, and they created this Her Life Stages products line. Never existed before. There had never been like a line that basically looked at every single stage, a hormonal stage in a woman's life, from the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. It was like a massive innovation. And it started winning awards, especially for perimenopause, a word that didn't even exist before, just because we're starting to acknowledge all of this. And so when Solaray, one of their biggest brand, launched Her Life Stages this year, my heart was warmed by the fact that, yes, a large company and their leadership really understood and is pushing this forward. It made me feel very hopeful about other companies and within everything from femtech on. So there is some hope in the horizon. Going again to part two, which is the woman-centric design, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, you bring up such great points. So for instance, you've looked at fertility for sure. No question about that. But the other thing that you bring up, which I think is incredibly important here, is ageism meets sexism. I think that that's huge, because one of the things that happens is that if you think we're uncomfortable about women, what about aging women? It just kind of adds an extra layer to this whole thing, which I don't believe exists in the same way for men.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As we see in politics, for example, with men who are really quite old being in the most senior positions, whereas women who are on TV, for example, tend to just disappear at a certain point in their career. And when you look at menopause from a femtech perspective, it's quite clear that it's probably the biggest market there is, just in terms of demographics. And in terms of the potential target population of perimenopausal and menopausal women and their potential to spend money on solutions. So when I was thinking about it, I strongly felt that this space is basically where sexism and ageism meet.
And then what's the solution? I mean, you're like, whoa, as a physician and as a clinical investigator, sometimes what you find yourself doing is trying to tease apart what's happening here as a woman's body changes. There are definite age-related issues, right, that I don't care who you are, you're going to experience. One of them is, for instance, once you hit your 60s, there's a loss of muscle. Now, I don't care if you're a Masters Olympian or is it somebody who lives on a couch, it's going to happen. It's just the Masters Olympian person is going to drop some muscle mass, no question, right? But if you've already banked a lot of muscle, then the drop is not going to be consequential. Outside of Olympic records or Masters levels or something, obviously it's going to be consequential there. But for your functional daily life, no. But that's age related. Now we add on to that whether or not you're on estrogen, whether or not you're on any kind of menopausal hormonal therapy, which is what we now call it instead of hormonal replacement. So boom, you're just crashing into one another. You've got menopausal changes, you've got the aging thing going on, and then on top of that, you've got sexism. So you've got all of this happening. And what have you found in this space?
Oh, a huge amount. There's a huge amount of innovation. So one of the companies I wrote about is Ember Labs, which you have already mentioned. They have created a bracelet that can help women deal with hot flashes. And they've done a small study to show that it also helps women sleep better at night when they can control the hot flashes to some extent. And the other company I wrote about is the OsteoBoost. So that's bone health technologies to help women preserve their bone density. And then there are several companies focused on vaginal dryness as well. So there's Medora, for example, and Joylux. And Medora is a medical device. It's not on the market yet. It's an external device that helps with vaginal dryness. And Joylux is a consumer tech device that is an insert that helps with vaginal dryness.
So I'm going to tell you a story. I've been involved with both Ember Labs. I actually ran the studies. And so I know about it. But here's the funny thing. When I came on board as their chief medical officer, and my main job was to run the validation trials, this is a great thing. So I looked at them all, and they were like bemoaning the fact that, gosh, funding is just hell, and try to be so innovative. And I say kudos to the Ember board for being major investors here and being such early adopters and so visionary. But one of the first things out of my mouth was this. I said to Liz, who is the CEO, Liz Gazda, I said, no one's going to pay attention to this unless it involves men. And she said, yes, indeed. And I said, well, I got really good news for you. And she said, well, what? And I said, it does. It's called prostate cancer. And so turns out men who are undergoing prostate cancer therapy typically have something incredibly unusual, and that's menopausal symptoms. How weird is that? And of course, a man having a hot flash is like the weirdest thing on the planet. Very difficult to endure. So I decided, okay. So I put together with this wonderful team. The whole Ember team was involved with this one. I just, you know, seeded this and put this protocol together with just brilliant people. And we executed this during COVID virtually. We just shipped out the Ember Wave, as you say, bracelets. And this has now been published in Nature. And what we were able to find was indeed, the guys did quite well on that. But here's the funny part. When we brought this up to, you know, investors, all of a sudden the guys just woke up and they went, whoa, wait a minute. What? It involves men? Are you kidding me? And the Milken Institute and all the guy places that were looking at prostate cancer were suddenly like, what? I'm awake now. You got me at prostate cancer, which is the number one cancer in men, 1 out of 8 men. Same as women for breast cancer, 1 out of 8 women. So that's a sneaky way to kind of get the product through the front door. You lead with men. It's crazy, but it kind of works. For the OsteoBoost, which is the vibrating belt, which is very much like what happened with NASA astronauts when they found that they were losing so much bone mineral density, and they used vibration, which, by the way, we all do. Take a walk right now, and for every step you take, you vibrate. And when you vibrate, you stimulate the cells in your bones to continually build bone and rebuild and keep it going. And so this is a different kind of device. It was just cleared by the FDA in January. So it's a medical device class 2, and it will be for men and women. But obviously, women are much more impacted earlier. And so I'm so glad that you looked at both of the companies because, again, what's interesting is not only did nobody care about bone health, it's like the poor little neglected, forgotten organ, but it involved women. So it was sort of like a double slap in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's that 80% of people with osteoporosis in the US are women. So it's really huge. It's a brilliant story, the one about the prostate.
Isn't that fabulous?
It really is. Yes. Elizabeth Gazda, actually, the CEO of Ember Labs, she mentioned that study to me, and it's great to hear that you came up with that.
We all talked about it together. It takes a village, and it was the whole team at Ember that got together and really made this thing work. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. So what I'm really saying to people out there who are thinking about being, you know, an innovator and an entrepreneur within femtech is you have to be stealthful and think this through carefully. And I also say, just like Stephen Covey, the famous, you know, guy who really coined the 7 habits of highly effective people. One of the things he said that I just can't get out of my mind is think with the end in sight. Where do you really want this to go, right? Who is your big audience here? And then start working strategies to be able to make that happen, right? So that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad you wrote this book, because the stories really illustrate the challenges and also some very wonderful solutions and ways to navigate around so much of this. So are you, at this point in time, after having written the book, are you hopeful?
I am, absolutely. But I'm also the kind of person who's energized by solutions. I read a lot of feminist literature, and it's so important to know about the problems and the gender data gaps that exist. But I'm just much more energized by reading about solutions as well. So I knew that I wanted to write a book of solutions, basically. And I've interviewed over 100 femtech entrepreneurs, investors, and researchers to shine a massive spotlight on their work and on the progress that's already being made. But obviously, there's still a long way to go and so much more that needs to be done. I think right now we're only at the beginning of this movement and of this shift.
Yeah, many people have never even heard the term femtech. And you ended this book with a very interesting question. You keep asking these awesome questions, right? What if femtech wins?
Yes.
What did you mean by that? Why were you so compelling?
There's an essay by Gloria Steinem called What If Feminism Wins? And I was sort of reflecting on that essay. And I also very briefly managed to meet her while I was writing this book. So she's in the book as well. And our conversation about the book is in the book, which was an incredible, incredible opportunity. So when I was reflecting on all the stories that I had collected, I wanted to finish on a chapter that would be a utopian vision of what could be possible if femtech wins and if we take women's health seriously. And so I wanted to imagine what that would look like. And it would include, for example, you know, that medical professionals are trained in all the contraceptive options and women's specific health issues and menopause and sexual health, and that women no longer experience delayed diagnosis across 770 diseases, and that all medical professionals pride themselves on making women feel comfortable and heard, and that we know exactly how to diagnose and treat endometriosis and PCOS and fibroids in the best possible ways, that our contraceptives no longer have side effects, and that investors compete with each other to invest in menopause companies because they're proud to have those companies in their portfolios, and that giving birth is safe for absolutely everyone, that when talking about birth, nobody would dream of saying you have to leave your dignity at the door, and that birth is appreciated as the great achievement that it is, that no woman is pressured into or denied an epidural or a C-section or any procedure of her choice for financial or cultural reasons. It'd be great if period products are available for free in bathrooms, just like toilet paper, and that no period product, and actually no other femtech product ever, is made to become landfill. So ideally, everything would be sustainable and biodegradable as well, and that all the ingredients are transparent and have been tested and are safe. So we were talking about tampons earlier and how the first modern tampon was created 90 years ago. And we've only just now had the first study looking into metals that are contained in tampons. And that doesn't just apply to tampons, it applies to other period products. But there's so little testing that has been done on them, and it's just an absolute disgrace. So I think we need much better guidelines around that. I also said that sex education needs to include sexual pleasure as a central theme because that's really important to our overall health. And I want everybody to be able to draw a clitoris. You know, I write about how we have penis doodles all over the world in public bathrooms, but nobody knows how to draw a clitoris. And I think that's very telling. So that would be something I would like to see.
And those penises are always about 3 times the normal length because they're written by men. I'm just throwing it out there just for your, I'm just the messenger here, okay? You know, and finally, remember the pink tax. And that is, for whatever reason, women's hygiene products cost so much more than men's. There's a real difference. And, you know, like, why are we paying more when guys' stuff is cheap as heck? And so we need to get rid of the pink tax, as it were, and shore up those prices and all the rest of it. All right. So as we bring this wonderful episode to a conclusion, what's your last little statement you'd like to make to the Her podcast audience, a message from the book, from you, you know, to be able to perhaps impart some wisdom, some hope?
Yeah, there's so much I could say. So the first review of the book came out recently. It was written by Kirkus Reviews, and they said the book helps us redefine the archetype of female entrepreneurship and that it offers hope for positive new ways of not only thinking and talking about female bodies, but also how to improve health outcomes for women worldwide. So I was really proud to read their words because that was exactly my goal. And what I would say to listeners as well is, if you're reading the book, you know, it has the vagina business on the title. Don't be scared. Don't be embarrassed. Read it on the train, read it on the plane, read it in the boardroom, and, you know, show off the cover so that other people can get used to the word as well, and so that other people can follow your lead.
I'd say just walk around with the damn thing and just let everyone see it. It's got a beautiful cover. Oh my gosh. Show everybody the cover here. Oh, what is it? It's got hot pinks and it's got some orange there with the black. And ooh, there's something in the middle that looks like a, oh no, could it be? It's not a penis. It's the other one. Oh my gosh. You know something, Marina? We can't thank you enough for being on the Her podcast. Everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Marina Gerner, and her book is The Vagina Business, The Innovative Breakthroughs That Could Change Everything in Women's Health, and has just came out. I would highly recommend it. It's very easy to read, and it's kind of an eye-opener, especially for women who are really interested in bringing many of their own ideas and innovations to life. So thank you so much, Marina, for being on the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for your kind words.
All right, here we go. So everyone, run on over to iTunes right now, rate and review this terrific episode, because I want to hear your feedback. That's why. And here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. These are the herbs and vitamins and minerals rooted in nature. And remember, the Her Life Stages products that cover a woman's hormonal journey all the way from her menstrual years through postmenopause. And that's what this whole episode has been about. More innovation in this field. So hooray to Solaray. Oh my gosh, I'm starting to rhyme. I'm scaring myself now. But go on over to solaray.com and absolutely check out the Her Life products, because you know that you need this. What stage are you in? All right. So this has been another amazing Her podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Her podcast community. So pop on over to drpeek.com, learn more about my work and social media, and join me every single week for another Her podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Marina Gerner, all right, as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. So thanks so much. And remember that, oh my goodness, your time in this world may be limited. Yep, it is. But the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and carpe diem. Seize the day. Have a great one.